Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Matt Cotrillo, 24 minutes away from leaving.
Ray
it's amazing what we have to do to accommodate some individual schedules. What time's the game?
Six.
How long does it take to get there?
From here, about 15 minutes.
So you can't be there at 5:15?
Well, no, because 45 minutes, because what normally my routine is, as soon as I get in, I get a roster, I go over the names with the opposing SID, then I like to go through those names so I have them ready in my head, so I had them correct. I go over my script that I get from...
This is a team they've already played, right?
Correct, but just a nice little refresher. You know, I like to go through a script. I'll have more stuff to read tonight because we're hosting Patriot League stuff, so we have Patriot League stuff that we have to read and promote and things like that. So we have that. Then we have a normal meeting with the officials 45 minutes beforehand. So that takes a couple minutes, and then I usually go back and continue to read some things over, make sure there's no changes, get starters, get something to eat beforehand, and then I'm on like 4 minutes before tips. Sometimes it's 10. I think tonight I'll probably be on like 10 or 15 minutes before tips. So just kind of depends on the night. Just want to be prepared so I get the people a good performance. So that's my daily routine if anybody cares for when I PA at Bucknell.
Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Emmy Blay moved up to the second line. Blay turns, fires. Crawford is there. The rebound in front. Bortuzzo, no. Shen, no. Bortuzzo has our first goal of the night. It's 1-0, St. Louis.
That's Kate Scott with the call on NBC Sports Net. It was an all-female hockey broadcast on International Women's Day yesterday. And Kate Scott with the call. Great job. I want to get to the two stories I want to get to. First, I actually want to get to a horse racing story first, then we'll get to Archie Miller next. How about this story here? Several people, including two prominent high winning percentage horse trainers, were indicted on federal charges involving performance-enhancing drugs and race-fixing. Jockey Jorge Navarro, trainer Jason Service, both indicted. Another trainer, Michael Tanuzzo, also indicted. Tanuzzo, by all accounts, has had a relatively quiet career, but his winning percentage has gone up of late. Service is not in the country right now because guess what? He is the trainer of Maximum Security. Maximum Security, by the way, just won the world's richest race, the Saudi Cup. $20 million purse. They say that Service is going to be taken into custody when he returns to the U.S. or is located. So far, all the indictments seem limited to the East Coast. Navarro and Service both did a lot of work at Monmouth Park in New Jersey. And last summer, they had winning percentages that raised a lot of eyebrows among the most knowledgeable in the sport. The indictment and how it reads is very intriguing. It reads in part that Service administered performance-enhancing drugs to virtually all horses under his care since February 2018. Now, in indictments, virtually all happen to be very powerful words. Now, remember, Maximum Security crossed the finish line first in 2019. The horse was disqualified for bearing out. Now, bearing out has nothing to do, zero to do with performance-enhancing drugs. That's just the path. And, of course, there have been a rash of breakdowns at Santa Anita. This doesn't have to do with Santa Anita, but I'm saying this is the siege that horse racing's under. And that is a huge story. Look, performance-enhancing drugs for horses obviously can determine outcomes, but they also can be used to deaden a horse's sensitivity to pain, which of course then can improve the horse's performance, but it also can lead to leg fractures for horses. So that's the indictment put out. Jason Service, Jorge Navarro, and Michael Tanuzzo.
Boy, the Kentucky Derby, Steve, it better be a good one this year without anything distracting it, because this has been really a bad year for horse racing.
Well, the Santa Anita thing, every time you turned around, there was a horse that had to be put down there. I mean, that's awful. I haven't heard about that at any other track, but maybe it's happened at other tracks and it's been a horse here or there. There, it's been double digits. You know, I think it's been over 20. It's been going on there for the past year, which has been, it's remarkable, really. All right. Now let's get to Archie Miller. We are at that time of the year where bracketology, and we've had Joe Lenardi on our show, and as I said about Joe Lenardi, the only way you cannot like Joe Lenardi is if you don't like people. It's the only way you cannot like Joe Lenardi, personally. He is just one of the nicest guys on the planet, and not only that, has done a phenomenal job over the years of predicting the outcomes of brackets, not based on his opinion, based on what he thinks the committee is going to do. Tries to think the way they think. And usually, if Joe has a bad year, Joe Lenardi, if he has a bad year, it's usually a year where he got 66 out of 68. Usually he's getting 67 out of 68, and he usually has them seated correctly. I mean, he's usually like 67 out of 68, usually. And again, the only time that if there's a miss, and usually the seating is spot on. I mean, the guy does a great job. And he's important. This is where I think Joe Lenardi is also important, along with Jerry Palm, by the way. I want to make sure, because Jerry's been on our show before, too. Jerry Palm does an awesome job as well. Those are the two primary guys. Let's take this in the realm of polls. Is the AP or coaches poll in football relevant? I mean, reality. Matt, how relevant are they to you?
In basketball?
In football.
Oh, in football. I think they give you, they matter that they give you an idea of what your, if what your team could fare in the first CFP rankings. But ultimately, it's the CFP rankings that determine that. But it gives you a barometer of where your team stands.
That's all that matters, okay? That's what the AP and the coaches poll both do in football. They create a level of excitement. Number 2 Alabama is going to play at number 8 Florida. Wow. Can't wait to watch that. 4 and 5 Penn State and Ohio State square off against each other. Wow. Can't wait to watch that. Now, in the first week of November, we start getting the first snapshot from the College Football Playoff Committee, and in reality, that's then they take over. But until then, the coaches' poll, the AP poll, give us all a gauge and increase the interest in college football. College basketball is the same way. As I've said for decades, college basketball doesn't need a poll. They have a tournament. But the polls in college basketball, wow, Tennessee won at number 6, Kentucky, wow. And number 1, Kansas is going to play number 2, Baylor, wow. Penn State's ranked for 2.5 months, ranked. That's awesome for the marketing people. Now let's get to bracketology. What does bracketology do? It's the same thing. Bracketology cultivates more interest in the sport. That's what bracketology does. Remember, college basketball is fighting to gain its footing in November and December. They get more of it once January rolls around, the college football season ends, and then really kicks into high gear after the Super Bowl's over. Bracketology, and what the Joe Lenardis and the Jerry Palms of the world do, increase interest in the sport. Awesome. And then you got Archie Miller, the head basketball coach at Indiana. Indiana lost a tough one at home to obviously a really good Wisconsin team. '60-56. I have no idea what question he was asked. No idea. I don't know if he was asked about bracketology, where they are in, you know, whatever. But he says that bracketology is like the children's show Sesame Street. Huh? And then he gets personal about it. Indianapolis Stars' Greg Doyle, it's just a response to a question. When you start going through the bracketology and you listen to the Sesame Street cartoon guys on TV who need clicks, the bottom line is strength of record, who'd you play, What did you beat? If you look at our wins, there are a few good teams. And this is fine, he's talking about. He says, look, we've beaten Florida State, Michigan State, Iowa, Penn State, who are clearly in the field. So if you're beating 6-7 teams in the field, you should be in the field. As he left the interview room, Miller made a reference to Joe Lenardi, mentioning a garbage can. And he says when it's over with, he should go back into the garbage can. Lenardi had just updated his bracket late Saturday afternoon. He has IU still among his last 4 in. What? Why are you taking shots at Joe Lenardi?
First of all, has he not watched his basketball team all year? He obviously does understand his basketball team. Sure, they have those wins that he mentioned, and we saw them getting that win against Penn State the second go-around. But before that, this was still a team that couldn't score 50 points in a game. I mean, come on. Well,
I mean, have they had good wins? Yes, they've had good wins.
But they haven't been consistent, not nearly consistent. You're a 12 right. seed or whatever they are for a reason. You're a lower seed in the Big Ten tourney for a reason.
Yeah, they're the 11. Right, I mean, I think they're going to get in. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that they're going to get in. But here's the bottom line. Because he's saying, you know, you need the Clicks because it's Indiana's name. That, I mean, that's what he's insinuating, that Joe's putting Indiana there to get more clicks. Well, to that, I've got to sit back and say, whoa, I've done this for a long time. A long time. But this is where your perspective, Matt, is going to be very important. What, you're not quite 30 yet, right?
No, I am 26.
Okay. What has Indiana basketball, in your opinion, been to you in your 26 years?
Some history to it, but overall really hasn't been that great the last few years.
Okay. So in the last Indiana team that Bob Knight brought to the Final Four was 1992. That was 28 years ago. Indiana's had only one Final Four team since. And that was Mike Davis in 2002. They lost to Maryland and Gary Williams in the championship game. I think it was down, I want to say that was down in Atlanta. Indiana, as much as the name Indiana means something in basketball, Indiana basketball has been, to me, on par with Michigan football the last 15 years. Really, really good. Dangerous at any time, but not great. Now, they did have a Tom Crean team that got to number one, I think, at one point with Zeller at center and those guys. They lost in the Sweet 16. That's been the one team in the last 15 years they've had where you sat back and going, okay, that's like the old days. But Indiana basketball is very much like Michigan football. Really good on any given night, really dangerous because they do have talent, but not great. Michigan football hasn't been great for 15 years. Indiana basketball hasn't been great for 15 years. It's been good. It's been really good. But the name doesn't knock it. You know, most people live in the present now. You don't talk about Indiana basketball in the same realm as Kentucky. The standard bearer in this conference has been Michigan State. Michigan State's been the standard bearer in this conference for two decades. Wisconsin's been a better program the last two decades than Indiana. A lot of ways Ohio State has been. And who has more Big Ten championships than anybody in the history of the Big Ten? Who, by the way, in the last 20 years has been a better program? Purdue. Basically saying they're using the name Indiana to get clicks. It doesn't have the same cachet as years ago. It just doesn't. And that's what he's got to realize. Now, Penn State may end up playing them on Thursday night, so we'll see. Okay. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
SMC Ford, F-150, Explorer, Escape. SMC Ford, F-150, Explorer, Escape. SMC Ford, F-150, Explorer, Escape. Sunbury Motors Ford is challenged to sell 75 new F-150s, Explorers, and Escapes during the month of March with these huge savings. Choose from over 140 new Ford F-150s with savings up to $16,000. And they start at just $24,794. Pick from over 25 of the totally redesigned 2020 Ford Explorer with discounts up to $7,500. And they're slashed to as low as $33,965. Browse from over 56 of the all-new 2020 Ford Escape. And they're reduced as low as $21,965. Want more? Take an amazing $10,000 off a 2019 Ford F-150 Raptor and a whopping $20,000 off a 2019 Ford Expedition. SMC has Central PA's largest selection of new Ford trucks. So hurry into Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Boss has your back when the weather turns white in a light day and a dark night. When winter shuts down work and schools, come with resolve and powerful tools. Endure through every push, salt, and stack until your streets are back to black. RW Most Garage, App Road and Sealants Grove. When the snow flies, you should fly to RW Most. They're your full-service dealer with installations and service by their highly factory-trained service technicians. At RW Most, they know all the big-name 4x4 trucks because they make the best plow trucks.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Lamar Stevens has been named first team All Big Ten. He is only the second Penn State player ever to receive all first team accolades twice in his career. And well deserved. Look, this guy in May announced he was coming back, and there was one thing and one thing only they were looking for. They were looking to see if they could get to the NCAA tournament. Well, you know what? Despite the fact that he really struggled the last two games of the season, he really did. It's obvious. You can just see it. I don't have to point out a shooting percentage to you because he has. Guess what? They're going to be playing in the NCAA tournament next week. As I said to Patrick after the game, I said, look, I've done this 38 years. It's only going to be the fifth one I've gone to. So if anybody doesn't think this is a monumental accomplishment, you don't get it. Nobody likes how it ended in the regular season. Nobody. But full body of work. Full body of work. They are someplace they have not been in 9 years. Matt Cotrillo was 17 the last time they went.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades, finding their customers, clients, exactly the right insurance, whether it's auto, home, life, business, bundles. And they've done so by getting their customers absolutely the best price. And if there's ever an update needed, or if there's ever a claim, they go to work as if it's their policy. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Hey, buddy.
Mark Lawrence is now here because Matt Cotrillo has gone off to Soika Fieldhouse, where he'll be the public address announcer tonight for Bucknell, as the women's basketball team, the number one seed in the tournament, will play their quarterfinal game tonight. That'll be at 6. And again, they must win all three games to get to the NCAAs.
I don't know what he's going to do there, but he took 20 Sharpies. So he went to the office closet and left with 20 Sharpies. So he's up to something, I guess.
That's because most people want their autographs with Sharpies.
Aha, okay.
And let's face it, he's a draw. Okay.
Maybe he's going to use them to do some drawing.
I hope not. He's got to pay attention to what's going on in the court. He needs to do that. Okay. As we mentioned earlier, Archie Miller, the head basketball coach at Indiana, compared bracketology to Sesame Street. Well, but all bracketology does is it increases interest in the sport. That's all it does. It gets people to watch. Okay, that's great. That's fine. Okay? That's all they do. And not only that, they're relatively close in accuracy. They have a great track record. He does. Jerry Palm does. Archie Miller should just worry about, you know, he stated in the answer why his team should be in. That's all he can do. And Joe Lunardi does not sit in the room and have a vote. Jerry Palm does not sit in the room and have a vote. You've done a lot, I'm sure, on your show, Mark, with coronavirus. I'd be correct, right?
Yes. Mostly the political weaponization aspect
okay,
of it.
Okay, that part of it. Well, obviously, the part that I'm dealing with it are people wondering what's going to happen with events. Already, the Indian Wells tennis tournament in California has been postponed because of coronavirus. So far, that is the only one that has been postponed to this point. Major League Baseball owners are holding a teleconference this afternoon to discuss contingencies. And NBA owners later in the week will have a conference call to discuss contingencies. I thought Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York, he says, phrased it well. He said, look, now they declare a state of emergency in New York. But that is a technical term. In order, you know, there's only so many things a governor can do to release then the funds needed or the avenue to get funds necessary in case they need them. Declaration of emergency is one of those boxes you check to do that. It sounds worse than it is. It's actually just a technicality that clears the red tape so they can get the money needed in case it is needed. And I thought he phrased it right at the bottom of the hour. He said, look, he says, I'm thinking about this. He says, when I'm looking at my mom. And his mom is over 80 years of age. As I said earlier, I've had people ask me. I had people ask me over the weekend, are you going to the Big Ten tournament? I said, yeah, I'm going to the Big Ten tournament. Are you concerned at all? I said, concerned about what? I said, no offense, I said, but the last few weeks, how many places have I gone? How many planes have I been on? I mean, just in the last, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, I've gone to Minnesota. I've gone to Michigan twice. I've gone to Chicago. I've gone to Indiana twice. This will be the third time I've gone to Nebraska. Just that's the tip of the iceberg. I said, and I've been flying. And I completely understand why the owners would have a conference call to talk about contingencies. I completely understand why the NBA owners are having a conference call to discuss contingencies. You have to. Just because you're being smart doesn't mean you're panicking. Being smart is not panic, right? Well, just being smart.
The average person is going to make their decision often out of fear, not out of science or medical aspects. So when they're at that meeting, they're not saying, okay, where's the virus? What's the mortality rate? What's this? What's that? You know, they are saying, how will people react? What if they don't wish to come? What if we have a game and no one wants to come? Skip a game that people aren't allowed, but right. What about one where nobody wants to come?
Well, I mean, but that would be that they've left it wide open at that point. What they're talking about is, okay, if we have, here's a contingency. All right, say it's a mass outbreak. All right. Now, it's happened in other parts of the world, so it's not out of the realm of possibility. All right, so who do we let in? All right, who do we let in? Okay, obviously the players and the management would let in. What about security? What about media people? What about access for the media to the clubhouse? What about, you know, so these are all the things that they have to discuss as to how they want to handle it. How many camera people do you allow in for TV? How many audio people do you allow in? How many stringers do you allow in to work on? How many cable runners? There are cable runners. How many do you allow in? Do you allow the replay staff in the stadium in? If you don't need replays up on the video board, do you allow them in? There aren't any fans. I mean, so I think these are all different things that they have to discuss as to, quote, how do we handle if there is a mass outbreak? Do we then want to temporarily not let people in to see the games, but who do we let in and why? So I think they have to discuss that and have a universal plan as to how to handle it, which is fine. That's just being smart and just trying to play chess here instead of reacting to it. Because right now, I believe, Mark, the death toll in this country is 22 from it.
Something like that, yep.
That's the number, which, ironically and unfortunately, is also the exact same number of the death toll of the Nashville tornadoes. Nobody's talked about, which, just to give it some perspective.
Yeah, the tornado made a bad move coming through during a primary and during coronavirus.
Right. So, I'm saying, though, just some perspective as to how many people have died.
Mm-hmm.
So far, now, obviously, the number on Corona is going to go higher. 44 people is too many to lose in anything, let alone 22 one thing, 22 in the other. I mean, all those, the people that lost their lives, the families and friends that are bearing the emotional burden of losing them, all of that. But in terms of pure numbers, they are right now the same. So do you play in an empty arena, an empty ballpark, an empty stadium? Or do you now sit back? And here's the next part. Do you sit back and do you discuss the decision to, okay, that's it, we're done for the season, and cancel it? The NCAA tournament has had to make, is obviously monitoring. Again, this affects Penn State, because Penn State's going to be a part of it. The Big Ten tournament is going to go on this week, and nothing's different, with one exception. The Big Ten network crew, which usually, not always, but they'll at Madison Square Garden and in Washington and in Chicago last year, had their studio crew right there courtside for the pregame, halftime, postgame. They're not going to come. They're going to keep the studio crew in Chicago. They're just trying to be smart about it. But this is what they have to discuss. And look, it's just being smart and preemptive. That way you have a plan in place just in case. And that's what they're going to do. Uh-huh. At the same time, as I told the people I talked to yesterday when they asked me, I said, look, I can't dictate my life by panic. I said, I just have to be as smart as I can about things, but I can't dictate my life with panic either.
Well, and I think it may be similar to the advice we got from the local Chamber of Commerce last week, where they advised businesses, plan, think, what would it do if you're going to make a sound decision if one of your workers contracted the virus? So now they're out of the office. Now you have other people who could have been potentially exposed. Just imagine if no one can come into your office. Now, in this business, we're pretty studio centric still.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, in fact, for, in terms of being smart about contingencies, I pretty much know what I would be doing in case there was a reason I couldn't go into an office. Obviously, I'm doing this show from my home now, but even in the teaching part, I really am at the point with my class where if I can teach the class on Monday the 16th of March, they have two projects remaining plus a final. one project, the first one, which I do have to teach, deals with talk shows. Then the last project they have due is a second play-by-play, but of a different sport compared to the first one they turned in last week. All right? Now, I've already taught that because I'll ask the class, Mark, what I'll do is this. I'll say, what sport do you want to do? And I'll go around the class. And usually there's three or four different sports that they want to do. I'll teach them specific to the preparation of each. And what I'll do is when the second one comes up, it really is going to be more of a refresher. So I could get away with not teaching that section and explaining to them, hey, look, it's like the first assignment, except it's a different sport. Best three calls, 2 minutes of play-by-play of that sport. I could get away with that. If I can teach the March 16th one, which is the talk show one, which is due on the 23rd of March, okay, then at that point, if something were to break out, I could continue teaching my class, and they could email the assignments to me. So I've got that part down.
So you're ready to go. And what if they can't come? You know, what if it's okay for you to travel, but one of them is concerned and, you know, hasn't...
They can always email their project to me.
Right.
It's a project-centric course. So the lecture of it gives a lot of helpful hints as to how to do something, how to go about it, how to prepare for it, and so forth. I mean, believe me, I've got enough kids in the class where, no offense, but one of the problems in teaching class over the last 15 years, Mark, is I've heard virtually every excuse as to why somebody isn't in class. I've heard them all. Believe me. From car trouble to a wide variety of reasons. A wide variety.
Dog ate the homework.
Oh, I've heard them all.
Dog ate
Mark,
the computer.
Right. So believe me, I already have kids who have missed class. I mean, I had one kid that I ended up giving an F to on his last project because the only days he showed up were on the project days. So I gave him an F, right, on the project. And he comes up and he goes, I can't believe you gave me an F on this project. I said, well, you didn't show up the other 10 classes. I said, so that was cumulative. Guess what he did after that?
Showed up.
Showed up at every single class after that. All right. Cindy in Shamokin Dam. Cindy, it is always a pleasure. It's great to hear from you again.
From you, too. And, you know, you're actually in a good position being on airplanes. I listened this morning to a physician on a talk show talking about how to minimize your risk. But I didn't know this, but they use HEPA filters to clean the air in airplanes. So when you're in the air, that's highly sanitized air up in that plane. You're probably better off than any other contained area.
Yeah, but you should see the people sitting around me, Cindy. No, I'm just kidding.
They do mention that risk. You are risked, but your risk is minimal.
That's a joke.
Anyway.
That was just a joke about that.
Right. But I wanted to poke you about the issue of the team's social responsibility. So, I mean, I know it's not football season. I don't know. What is the seating in the BJC?
15,261, I think is the number.
Oh, I was going to guess. Three times that much. Okay, so if you brought, let's say it's a football game, you bring 100,000 people there. Mm-hmm. I think the cross-infection rate they're reporting on this is about 20%, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 20,000 people go home carrying the bug. Don't you think that's kind of irresponsible? And the football game, for example, draws from a huge region. And so now you're sending the bug right back out to all those communities with those people. Or, as you say, the BJC 15,000, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it might not have been... Well, I hold a dear place in my heart for Thon, right? If it might not have been the best idea this year from the risk, especially when you know that so many of those children who are immunocompromised are there. You know, it might not have been the best idea to can all those people together for 46 hours, as I recall, in that space. A lot of risk, a lot of touching, a lot of togetherness, hugging, etc. And if anybody had it, they shared it up a storm. But especially it would worry me because of the kids who are sick, who get to go, but they're at risk. That's a thing their parents should have thought really hard about this year.
Well,
but is any sporting event's attendance worth that risk, Steve? Now, well, I think you could play it. Like, I'm kind of surprised. Think about this past weekend when the Big Ten wrestling tournament was going on. Boy, talk about swap and sweat, you know. I mean, here you are grappling with this guy, mono and mono. I mean, if he's sick, you're sick. It's really pretty much, you know, you're breathing in each other's face.
While I do know exactly what you're talking about, first of all, football's outdoors.
I know it is. But you know, you're still sitting next to people, and you're touching stuff like the rails and the bathroom facilities. But anyway.
Yeah, it's still outdoors. Look, when I look at events like this, anybody could walk in sick with anything.
That's true.
Okay? I mean, anybody could get the flu at any particular time because somebody decided to go to a game with the flu.
Exactly. Or chickenpox, okay? Or the measles.
Well, we aren't having outbreaks of chickenpox and things like that.
True.
And so far, unfortunately, it's been mostly people who are 80 years of age or older, and many have been, Mark, how many were in that nursing home in Washington?
That's two dozen or so.
Which is the highest percentage of the people that have died from this so far.
Right.
I am somebody who, look, I'll take the proper precautions and so forth, but I'm not going to panic myself into, I'm not going to go. I'm going. I'm not even going to think twice about it.
Well, and I respect that. But then I think about that lawyer in New York who took the train into Grand Central Station, and as a result of his...
That's the Westchester County one.
Pardon me?
The Westchester County attorney, yeah. And that's where they've had a lot of... Yeah, it's Westchester County. You're right, he took the train in. And
that
Westchester County.
That's a pretty selfish move, as far as I'm concerned, guys. He's like Typhoid Mary, for goodness sake. Except that, I don't know, has he gotten sick yet? Typhoid Mary never actually got sick. She just carried typhus into every house she went into to work.
Only Cindy would know that.
Actually, she's right. No,
Only Steve and Cindy would know that.
Until they put her on an island and would not let her off. And that's how they stopped her from killing children in households all across the city. That's not a practical answer for this problem. You know, I thought it was interesting today. I learned if you stretch out your arm, if the person's that far from you, it's very unlikely that they will sicken you, even if they are sick. Very unlikely that they will transmit to you.
Usually, I've heard 6 feet. But
right.
That's
so, yeah. Well, my arms aren't that long, so okay. Mark will tell you, 5 feet two, so it's about half or half. Anyway.
That was my mom.
But they're mom's arms.
That was my mom. 5 foot
right.
Two. My brother and I will tell you we thought she had the reach of a 7'2".
The problem is that there are responsible people and then there are irresponsible people. And there are people who can cope with this and people who cannot cope with this. And I get the challenge that the public health people and the government people are walking in terms of trying to stop the spread of this, trying to create circles of care around sick and risk and at-risk populations, and yet trying to keep the world moving along. You know, 80% of the people who get it do okay. So even if you get it, you know, I'm unfortunately in the upper bracket, right? I would be at risk. But younger people, not so much. So I think that, but I do think I would struggle with this. If I was one of these team owners, if I was an official at the university, if I was still on the school board, I might be saying, I'm not sure we need to do this. I don't think we need to gather people. Does that mean the event doesn't happen? Well, no, I guess you could let the kids play basketball because rationally you could take, what do you think, it's like 20, 40 people's temperatures. Everybody appears to be well at this moment. Okay, we'll play basketball. But I'm not sure we need to let 5,000 people into the gyms when we can't screen them and introduce that risk.
Well, like I said, I think they're smart to sit there and have contingencies.
Yes.
But
I think they ought to think real hard. Do they want to bear that burden? Do they want to be the ground zero? That's the tricky thing.
Well, you can do that with almost anything.
That's true.
You know,
But then there are essential things and there are non-essential things.
I mean, do you know how many metal detectors I've gone through in my lifetime?
Right.
Okay.
And it always goes off on me. I go to the airport. Right. I have that special pass that you can walk, go through the speed thing.
And I never get through
because they always stop me and then they have to get someone over to, run their hands all over me.
Wander.
Pardon me?
You need to be wanded.
No, not wanded. Oh, no.
Patted.
Hand searched.
Pat them.
Oh, yes. It's a joyous experience.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
Anyway,
thanks for checking in.
Everybody stay well. Bye.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. Back tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.